If you need some help with your technology or you're just interested in the subject, the next half hour is very much for you. It's our regular spot with Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, whom you can find on Twitter at Gadget Detective. Hi there, Fevzi.
Hello.
We'll start with Gadget of the Week as we normally do. What have you got for us this week and why?
Okay, so this is called the SanDisk Extreme Pro Portable SSD. So this is a portable device for storing data, and that can be all your photos, your videos, loads of documents. It's a very capacious thing that's portable. So it's about just under 4.5 inches tall, about two and a quarter inches wide, and less than 1/2 inch thick. So think of it like a sort of half used bar of soap sort of thing. It's very portable, fits in a shirt pocket, but can have very high capacities. So this one comes in different capacities, 500 gigabytes, 1 terabyte, and 2 terabytes. And that probably doesn't mean much to most people. So let me explain. If you take the middle one, which is say 1 terabyte of data, that's about 250,000 photographs, or 250 high-definition feature films of 2 hours long each, or 6.5 million document pages, which, if you think about it, that's about 1,300 physical filing cabinets in your shirt pocket.
So in layman's terms, a lot.
A lot, yeah. So if you want to go for the sort of entry-level half a terabyte one, that's enough for a lot of people. And it's tremendously fast. That's the other thing about this. It's a solid-state drive. So traditionally, we use hard disk drives for storing. Hard disk drives had literally rotating disks in them with a little arm going across. It looked a bit like a record player where the arm would go across and read data off different parts of the disk, rather like if you imagine having a record and plonking down the needle at certain points and listening to the bits you want. That's all gone now. Nowadays, we're looking at solid-state drives, which does the same thing. It stores all those lovely files that we talked about, but it does it more quickly, no moving parts, which means it takes less power. It means if you drop it, there's a good chance that the device will survive because there's no moving parts. It means it's silent in operation. There are no fans or anything like that. So all in all, a very good thing. This one in particular I like is from SanDisk, and it is ruggedized. So first of all, the solid state drive has got an aluminium body built around it to dissipate the heat that it produces as it works, but it's also water and dust resistant. So it's coated in this sort of durable silicone layer. It's quite attractive sort of grey orange design, but if you drop it, it's a very good chance it will survive the fall. And you can use it, for example, let's say you've been using your computer for a while and it's full of photos and full of video and everything else, and the computer is really slow and you're thinking, well, do I need a new computer? Very often all you need to do is offload that chunk of 10 years worth of photos that are sitting on there. So you can either use it to offload it and free up the space, or you can use it as a backup device. But bear in mind, if you offload it and then delete the original, it's no longer a backup, it's then the original. So you may want to have two devices like this and have a spare somewhere. And it also means that you can hide it away somewhere else, so that if use it as a backup and there was, God forbid, a fire or a burglary or something, and you've got an encrypted copy of all your data, that's to say a scrambled copy of your data on one of these devices, give it to a trusted friend in a different location. So if catastrophe strikes, you've still got all your data. Yeah. But it is just amazing. I was just surprised exactly at how fast these things are. So it's 1,000 megabytes a second, just over. So that would be, for example, the ability to transfer 250 photos a second, or a HD feature film every 4 seconds, and hundreds of thousands of files every second. So, incredibly fast. So if you want to do backup, it's a really good way of doing it because it's quick. And it means that one of the reasons why people tend not to do backup is because it takes a long time. And even when they've set it up, they don't want to spend hours waiting for it to back up. They just want to back it up once and then just update the backup on a regular basis and for it to be quick. Yeah. So this device gets 4 stars. It would have got 4.5 out of 5. But this is the 1050 model. There's one that will transfer almost twice as fast from the same range. I haven't had a chance to test that one yet, so but if it's as good as I think it is, probably the 2000 model is the one to go for. But okay. I will try and get hold of that and test it and let you know.
How much?
Right, good question.
Big question.
Let's have a look. Right, so the half a terabyte model is £118, rises to about £200 for the 1 terabyte, and about £330 for the two. So the cost per unit stored goes down as the capacity goes
up.
But
I would
say to people, just buy what you need now. Because the cost of storage, these SSD storage, continues to come down. So if, for example, you think you can get away with, say, half a terabyte for the next year or so, then buy that, because in a year's time, you'll probably be able to buy, you know, a terabyte drive for the difference that you would have spent. So then you'll end up with more storage and only get what you need, sort of thing. Normally, I say to people, you know, plan a bit in advance, and that's not a bad thing to do. But with storage, where the prices keep dropping over time and the capacities keep going up, it's probably more sensible to buy what you need and just a bit more, but not don't go over the top and buy, you know, 2 terabytes if you don't really need it, because that's quite a lot of money. But if you need it, it's good.
And talking of the speed at which you can transfer all these photographs and feature films and so forth, it seems like only yesterday when you try to send one still image by dial-up. I know this isn't actually sending it to a different person or whatever, but, you know, and you'd come back 10 minutes later and the photograph would be halfway down. It's incredible, isn't it?
Well, just remember, you know, we used to have modems that were measured in, you know, thousands of bits per second. And now we're measuring in millions of bytes a second. So, like, 8,000 times faster, approximately.
Incredible.
Speaking.
Incredible.
So, yeah, it is amazing. And my current computer has a million times as much memory in it as my first computer. I worked it out. So my first computer was actually, it was a BBC Micro, and it had 32K, kilobytes. Yeah, and that was, at the time, 32K was whiz-bang. It wasn't one of these cheap Spectrum bits. Yeah. It was a proper computer. So 32 kilobytes, and now we're up to 32 gigabytes, and that's literally 1,000 times more in my current computer.
And we know
gigabytes.
And we haven't arrived at our destination. That's the thing, isn't it? Presumably, we will look back and laugh at what we've got now in a few years' time.
Yes, or we'll have an artificial intelligence program to look back and laugh for us, is probably more likely.
Which kind of leads us into tech news, which we'll do in a moment after Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band and Hollywood Nights. If you fancy some Hollywood Nights but can't have them at the moment, there could be another way, Fevzi Turkalp.
Yes, so this is from an article I saw in The Guardian this morning, actually, and the headline is Virtual Reality Tourism Ready for Takeoff as Travellers Remain Grounded. So this is something that's been... You know, the funny thing about this pandemic is that it's accelerated a lot of pre-existing trends. So the things about, you know, remote working and video calling, that was already there. But the take-up of it and the advancement of the technology has been turbocharged by need. Mm. And in the same way, we're starting to see the same thing with virtual reality technology. So let me first of all explain what virtual reality is. For the most part, it means wearing a pair of bulky goggles with little television sets in each eyepiece and speakers feeding your ears. So your eyes are fed with pictures on the screens, and your ears are fed with sound. So the idea of virtual reality is it replaces reality. That's opposed to augmented reality, where you can still see reality, but there's a layer of digital information put on the top. So with virtual reality, when you've got one of these headsets on, what you can start to do is visit places, virtually speaking. So for example, there is the National Geographic VR, which has a three-dimensional trip to Antarctica. So it's three-dimensional because you've got the headset on. As you turn your head, as opposed to a television screen, you know, you turn your head from the TV, you see the couch. But with a headset on, you turn your head and you see something else. Just like in real life, when you look around the room, you see different things. So here, you can be in Antarctica, you can be in a kayak, you can look at your... If you're wearing the special sort of gloves or holding the special sensors, you can actually see your hands and you can be doing things like rowing or punching or whatever it is that you're doing. You can look at the whales in Antarctica. You can get up on the ice shelf without feeling cold. It is quite amazing, and there's lots of destinations that you can go to virtually. Egypt, to the gardens of the Taj Mahal, or just anywhere you can imagine, Paris, Venice. And some of this stuff exists for free. You know, there's a lot of free tours of museums and art galleries, which I've found great during this period, to be honest with you. The technology is still in its early stages, so it's still a bit clunky. The headsets are a bit heavy, and, you know, it's not completely believable. You have to sort of suspend a bit of reality, but it can be great, and there's programs that you can run on these things that are also very relaxing, you know, not necessarily seeing a famous spot, but being by a waterfall or on the beach, or, you know, water is quite a common theme in these, because you hear the sound, and I suppose you could open the window and feel the breeze, but, you know, so the technology is not perfect, but I think in these days where so many people are locked in, actually this would be quite good for a lot of people's mental health.
Sure.
Just the ability to do that.
What's the starting point in creating this this infinity of images? Do they start with real pictures of the Sphinx and then the computer does something clever, or does the computer start the whole job and do something clever?
So it can be either. I mean, typically it's real pictures. So if you're going to Egypt, you know, they'll go there with special 3D cameras. And they'll shoot, and then the computer will, as you say, do something clever and create a 3D mapped world where it will work out your position in the world and which direction your headset is looking in, and you will see the picture that you would see if you were standing in that spot looking in that direction. And then it animates things on top of that, so you may see, you know, a bird flying through the sky. So there'll be a sort of a digital layer, you know, to make things look real. So, and again, with, you know, waterfalls and things like that, it will be a combination. But the basis of it will tend to be real, unless, you know, it's somewhere that doesn't exist or somewhere where we don't have a lot of pictures of. So they say the surface of Mars, we have some pictures of Mars, but a lot of that would be created digitally.
I could still go to Mars, though, no trouble at all.
Yeah, you can. It's quite amazing. And it sounds a bit strange, but there are lots of applications for this. I saw a VR program not long ago, which was being used as an experimental platform for people with dementia. And it allowed people with dementia, who often have good memories of their earlier life, to go back and visit that earlier life. And it was quite remarkable. You know, obviously it was bespoke, but they were able to go back to the house where they'd lived and all sorts of things. And people were much happier. Right. Actually, you know,
it's quite
interesting. So I think that we can play with this. I mean, one of the in terms of the price, okay,
you can pay, ask you about that. What kit do I actually need? Is it just the goggles, okay, or a lot more than that?
Yeah, so there are different ways of doing this, right? The best quality is like a high-end computer and a headset connected to it, and then you're talking about thousands of pounds. Then there are the headsets that have got everything built into them, so you don't have to attach them to a computer. So that would be something like the Oculus Quest 2, and it's all built in. That's a few hundred pounds. The thing about Oculus Quest, owned by Facebook, guess what? You have to link it to your Facebook account, so now they know what you like looking at in your virtual life as well. So anyway, if you wanted to start it really cheap, there is a cardboard headset that you can buy. It's about a tenner. And you slot your Android smartphone into it and you run the same right software. And the Android smartphone...
Bet that looks a treat.
It looks strange, but who cares, because you can't see it from the outside.
Yeah, true.
But as a starting point, it's actually quite special, because what happens is, imagine that you've got the smartphone sideways in what they call landscape mode, wide. So it becomes two pictures, so it shows you the same picture, but you know the stereoscopic effect. Do you remember those devices you used to get where you used to put a little disc in with photos and used to see it in stereoscope, as they used to call it, 3D images? So it does the same sort of thing, but with moving images and using the existing smartphone. So you can start for 10 or 20 pounds with either cardboard or plastic basic screens. They're not as sophisticated, but it you know what, it's not bad, because the human brain fills in a lot of gaps. And
go on,
just like we could just like we can watch a movie which is two-dimensional on a screen across the room and still find it absorbing, this can be much more absorbing than that. And I think it's a great place to start, and there's free software available as well.
I was just going to say, finally, talking of the human brain, you were saying you can go to Antarctica without getting cold, but what's it going to do to the human brain if it's being told that you are in Antarctica and you're actually in a heat wave in Maidenhead, or you know, conversely, you're looking at the Caribbean in the middle of winter. That's quite a big ask of the poor old human brain, I think.
But you know, the body sometimes adapts. I mean, your brain may tell you you're feeling a bit chilly because your eyes are telling you you're surrounded by ice, and it is quite interesting as this advances. And by the way, another use of this technology for when we can book holidays is to see the virtual location, to look around your room, look around the hotel, even when you're picking the seats for the flight, look at the different seat layouts in 3D and say, yeah, I want that one. So there's a lot of applications for this. But in the future, and I'm not, you know, some years yet, it will be indistinguishable from reality. It will be all absorbing. You will have when you touch something, you will feel it. When you breathe in, you will smell it. You will feel the breeze. All of these things will come, and then you end up in that sort of matrix type idea of I predict that in the future only poor people will live in reality. People who can't afford a good AI. I think that day will come, and people will look down on people who have to live on terra firma.
Stop right there, because that is the line of the week. That is the quote of the week. Thank you so much, Fevzi. Good to talk to you as ever. We shall do it again. I assume we'll do it again, shall we, at the same time next week?
Hope so, all being well.
All right. You can find Fevzi on Twitter. He's @GadgetDetective.